On calendar this morning is the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District versus Washoe County Board of County Commissioners and Tammy Davis Treasurer, case number 60395. Are council ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Reese, you ready to go?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, good morning, my name is Devin Reese. Assisting me on the briefs and in the presentations today are Gina Manchetti, my colleague, and I'd also like to thank Michael Brown, the chief of the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District, who certainly has a broad history with the court, and thank you for the opportunity. I would like to reserve some time with the court, if I may, for rebuttal, so 5 minutes to do that. And I am mindful that I am a person who's come late to the game. This court has heard a successive series of cases beginning in 2006, which has led us to be here today. And so I don't want to spend a lot of time on the facts of the case unless the court has specific questions, other than I want to speak specifically to the practical realities of what has occurred post the decisions that have occurred in this case as it relates to how Washoe County went about clawing back money from the district. The district, of course, is a fire protection district. It's charged with taking care of the citizens and visitors and residents of Incline Village and Crystal Bay. It is a great group of people. It is people who are dedicated to serving the lives and protecting the needs of those people in that area. And because of the financial reality that we find ourselves in and the economics of the last, let's say, 7 or 8 years, everyone has made some very difficult sacrifices. In this case, more than $6.8 million has been taken back or clawed back, as we say in the briefing, by the county and the county treasurer. Of that, $900,000 approximately is interest. And the practical effect of that has been the brownout of a station. It has been the laying off of 10 firefighters and paramedics. It's been the inability of the fire district to really get a handle on its budget, and those things have practical real-world consequences. I had the fortunate opportunity to clerk here in this building, and sometimes as a young law clerk, I didn't quite see the forest for the trees, and I hope through the 15 years that I practice law that I have been better able to do that. But the decision of this court today has the ability to rectify what I believe is a wrong. It has the ability to change what happened in the district court for the better. I am mindful that I sit under a sign that says fiat justitia, which is really the common law way that a writ would happen when an aggrieved party such as this would come to the court and say, someone, in this case an inferior tribunal or a city council or a treasurer, has done me wrong, and the way that they come to this court is with hat in hand and fiat justitia in mind and say, the writ must issue. And in this case, that did not happen.
What could the county have done differently, though?
A lot of things, Your Honor. The county, in its decision-making and deliberative process to examine how it might go about filling this hole, because at the end of the day, that's what this is. We have to follow the money. The county had a list of probably 12 different options that it could have proceeded with. When ordered by this court to begin making refunds to the approximately 8,700 property owners, the county said, we've got to do this. We've been ordered by this court to do it. How are we going to do it? And they came up with a list, and those included things like filing for municipal bankruptcy, paying it out of their reserve fund, making a claim with their E&O carrier.
Isn't that the heart of discretionary authority with an executive branch?
Certainly, Your Honor, the executive branch is imbued with the ability to have discretion. When that discretion begins to seep over and bleed into areas where it would be an abuse of discretion or would be a wrong thing to do, then that's where the writ has to be the remedy for that abuse of power. If, for example, Your Honor, I know that all of you spent time as district court judges, if Washoe County, in its infinite wisdom, had said, we're going to pay for these tax refunds by eliminating benefits for all the judges in the Second Judicial District Court, your thought process would be that they have the discretion to do that, at least as far as your question is concerned. My thought process is the county may do many things, but it may not do things which are illegal or contrary to state law. And that's why, although I believe there's discretion, and I believe in the power of the executive body to make that kind of discretionary activity, there is also a check and balance, and in this case it's the writ, to say what they did was wrong or an abuse of that discretion. Much like I wouldn't say they could eliminate your salaries in order to pay for the taxes.
Well, we couldn't eliminate our salaries because it's we're state employees, but all, at least in the clerk, and I'm assuming in the second it's the same thing, our staff is our JEA, Judicial Executive Assistant, our law clerk, and our bailiff. We're all county employees. So they could say, you could be a judge, but you're not going to have a court reporter, or you're not going to have a JEA or a law clerk or a marshal or a bailiff.
Well, and the example I give, obviously, Your Honor, is one which I'm hoping would resonate with this panel. The reality is one of the examples that they said they could consider.
Let's accept the premise that you offer, that the decision of the panoply of decisions before the county commission was one that was illegal. What about the decision to restrict the distribution of funds to the fire protection district was illegal? What statute did it violate, and how did it violate it?
Your Honor, it actually improper in three different ways. Okay. One is, under this court's ruling in Golconda, there is a 424 fire district is created, the county must collect and shall distribute. And so our position is that under that statute, there is not discretion to claw the money back. It must be collected as the people will it to be collected, and it must be distributed. And so it's that mandatory and precatory language of that statute which says it must be collected and shall be distributed.
Is the fire protection district, and I think we should focus only on them because you're focused on the statute that compels distribution to a fire protection district, entitled to retain taxes that were unconstitutionally collected in the first place?
Your Honor, I think...
And this problem begins with the fact that the county commission made a series, or their assessor made a series of errors, at least according to prior determinations by this court, in assessing property under unconstitutional methods. Therefore, the taxes paid in consequence were unconstitutional. Can the district say we get to retain unconstitutionally collected taxes, or are we only entitled to receive constitutionally collected taxes?
Obviously, Your Honor, the better part of valor is to receive that which you're due. I mean, I think that's just a general principle of justice. In this case, you have the added issue of reliance. You have a fire district which has no means over how the taxes are collected, in fact pays the county treasurer a portion of what they receive in order to collect it, and the county acts as the sole arbiter, the sole discretion about how it's calculated, collected, when it's done, how distributions are made or are not made. And in this case, you have a period of 7 years in which there were, in your words, unconstitutionally collected taxes. At some point in time, the buck has to stop getting passed. The county should step up and say, we made a mistake and we will right that wrong. Because they're really the only people who are in the position to do that. The fire district has no ability to say, well, we've gotten an outside auditor and we think what the assessor and all of these things were done improperly and we're not going to accept it. They rely, and to their detriment in this case, upon the county to be correct in their authority to do so. In this case, a 7-year period of time elapses, and I think that that period of time creates a special fiduciary obligation under Golconda to release those funds and then to not later try to claw it back. The problem becomes, I think, as a matter of tax policy and as a matter of broad implication in the state, that when those entities which are charged with collecting the taxes do so in error, that they're going to go and force those who have been the recipients of those ill-gotten funds to pay it back. And I think that creates absolute havoc on a statewide scale. That you said I'm focused on the fire district, but I'm also, of course, I have two children here with me today who are in the Washoe County School District, who The school district received the same kind of funds, and I'm worried about how the clawing back by Washoe County of those funds is to be addressed, too. Obviously, I have a client here today, but tax policy broadly being made, this is an important issue. The reason why the fire district is unique is because under 474, it has this statute that creates it and goes about telling how they're be funded, and it says, shall collect and must distribute. And then this court said in Golconda that they do that as a fiduciary, meaning they have an obligation upon which we are able to rely in order to make budgetary decisions.
But you'd agree, wouldn't you, counsel, that Golconda doesn't address the circumstances in which the taxes that were collected and then later distributed were unconstitutionally paid?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that.
In fact, it would seem that there's no statute or case that addresses this situation.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that as well.
So the County Commission, returning full circle to Justice Perry-Gary's question, is trying to sort this out and making some administrative decision, and reasonable people throughout the county might disagree about the County Commission's decision to do what they're doing or did, but isn't that an executive branch decision? And don't they have the power under the separation of powers doctrine to make that decision, even if, from your point of view, it's a bad one?
Your Honor, I would answer that in two ways. One is I would say it's really a legislative function. Our Nevada legislature next door could write a statute that says, here's what happens when monies are ill-gotten or are later determined to not have been fit. And that's what 324 does. And that is a statute that was designed in that branch of government to answer it. If this court believes that someone other than my client or this court should answer it, it's that branch. The second thing is again, we imbue our elected officials with lots of discretion. However, we also say this court and your honorable judges here in this building will be able to review those decisions to make sure that they are not abusive or illegal or unconstitutional. And that is the very fundamental nature of separation of powers. I think I'm out of time, so I want to be able to give myself the opportunity to speak again. But
okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Reese. Good morning, Mr. Creekman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm David Creekman with the Washoe County District Attorney's Office, representing the Washoe County Board of County Commissioners and Washoe County's elected treasurer, Tammy Davis, who's with me in the courtroom today, sitting on the right side, your right side of the courtroom. I'd like to start with the Golconda case. The Golconda case established, with respect to interest collected on fire district monies, a constructive trust. A constructive trust was last and probably best defined by Justice Cardozo when he was still with the Court of Appeals for the State of New York as the formula through which the conscience of equity finds expression. When property has been acquired in such circumstances that the holder of the legal title may not in good conscience retain the beneficial interest, equity converts him into a trustee. A constructive trust, such as the one relied upon by the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District through the Golconda case, is a fictional trust on wrongfully obtained property. The beneficiary is the wrongfully deprived party. The trustee is the party who holds the res that he or she should not be holding. The purpose of a constructive trust is very limited, and it is to prevent the trustee from enjoying any unjust enrichment from his wrongful possession of the property or the res of the trust. The constructive trust is a specific restitution of a received benefit in order to prevent unjust enrichment, which was precisely the case in the Golconda case. The Humboldt County in that case was withholding interest earned on ad valorem tax revenues destined for the fire protection district. A trustee in a constructive trust is not a real trustee, as he owes none of the traditional fiduciary obligations and responsibilities associated with an actual trust, an express trust. A constructive trust will not be imposed if doing so favors one claimant or one potential claimant to the res over another potential claimant. And this is an important aspect of this case. In this case, we have five taxing districts would share an Incline Village ad valorem taxes. Those taxing districts are Washoe County, the Washoe County School District, the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District, IVGID, which stands for the Incline Village General Improvement District, and the state of Nevada. The imposition in this case of a constructive trust on ad valorem tax revenues unconstitutionally collected would necessarily harm each of the other beneficiaries or entitlees to those tax revenues. And the law of constructive trusts just doesn't permit the imposition of a trust to the detriment or the expense of someone else with an entitlement to those revenues. In Golconda, again, the constructive trust was imposed from keeping Humboldt County from retaining interest. When those revenues, when the constructive trust was imposed and those revenues were disgorged, the constructive trust terminated. If anyone in this case or in any aspect of any other cases related to this case had a constructive trust on unconstitutionally collected tax revenues, it was the taxpayers at Incline Village and not the taxing districts. In this particular case, the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District is asking the judiciary cross the line, the separation of powers line, which divides this court or in any judicial body from the other coordinate branches of government. And they're doing so in about four or five different ways. They're asking that this court override the treasurer's duty to keep the public money and pay it out only as provided by law, and a duty which, if not complied with, subjects the treasurer to criminal penalties. They're asking that the board of that the court override the Board of County Commissioners' imposition of the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District's tax rate. That rate was established pursuant to 474.200 at 0.5525% by permitting them to collect more than that effective tax rate. They're also, because of the interrelatedness of the taxing jurisdictions who are funded by Incline Village ad valorem taxes, they're asking that this court override the Board of County Commissioners' establishment of tax rates for other taxing jurisdictions. Each of these taxing jurisdictions is on a par with one another. One isn't superior to the other, nor is any one of the taxing jurisdictions inferior to the other. And I will remind the court of the obvious. There are but 100 pennies in each dollar collected. There aren't 127, there aren't 142. Each dollar is fully allocated in proportion to the taxing district's tax rates, and to the extent a taxing district obtains more than its tax rate, it has to come out of the dollars available to the other taxing districts. They're also asking that the court override the Board of County Commissioners' unanimous decision to allocate refund responsibility among the taxing districts that share in Incline Village ad valorem taxes.
Mr. Kriegman, on that point, I appreciate the argument you make about separation of powers, but does the county have to have either statutory or regulatory or some authority that it points to when it seeks a refund from its corresponding taxing districts?
Your Honor, ideally, yes, the county would have expressed statutory authority, and the county may have expressed statutory authority in 354.220 and 354.240. This, I will remind the court, was an unprecedented event, both in Washoe County and throughout the state of Nevada. Those two statutes permit the county commission to declare that the taxpayers entitled to receive a refund have a legitimate entitlement, and if they unanimously find that they have a legitimate entitlement, it then permits the withholding from the taxing jurisdiction of subsequent allocations to pay the refund liability. This was the political decision that served as the basis for Judge Flanagan's denial of the writ. But continuing on in the separation of powers realm, the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District also urges the court to override the legislature's declaration of the maximum tax rate permitted to a fire protection district.
Before you get to that particular argument, I have a follow-up question on 354.220. If the court were to determine that that statute doesn't apply to this circumstance, then is there any other statute that empowers the county to seek refunds of overpaid revenues from its corresponding taxing?
Yes, Your Honor, there are a number of them. 249-100, 361-275, 361-740, and 354-270, to name but a few. Those impose a duty upon the treasurer to accurately account for incoming monies and outgoing monies to keep the public money and pay it out precisely as provided for by law.
Well, under 474-200, subparagraph 3, there seems to be an equally imposed duty on the treasurer to distribute funds that have been received, taxes that have been collected, I should say, to the fire protection district. Does that statute collide with the treasurer's duties to reconcile past distributions? I mean, the problem here is that we're in different fiscal years.
It absolutely collides with the treasurer's duty, especially insofar as it's later determined through whatever determination is finally arrived at, that those tax revenues that were collected and originally dispersed were collected on an unconstitutional basis. It makes an enormous difference, Your Honor. That statute carries with it the implication that the money that's coming in is legitimately collected. It happens on a regular basis that the treasurer adjusts amounts when she adjusts the books, I should say, when a determination is made that there's been an accounting error or that there's been an overpayment or that there's been an underpayment. The position of treasurer carries with it, I believe, the inherent authority to make those adjustments as time goes on.
But even with the statutes colliding, under Barham versus Otto, she had no choice. I mean, she has to pay back the taxpayers.
She has to pay back the taxpayers out of those dollars, that each of which contains 100 pennies, all of which are allocated amongst the taxing jurisdictions. That's precisely correct, Justice Jerry. Moving on, though, the legislature has declared that the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District is entitled to a maximum tax rate of 1% at 474.190. Their tax rate now, or at the time this case was initiated, was set at 0.5525%. If the value of the property subject to ad valorem taxation in Incline Village decreased by 50%, and if the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District were entitled to continue to receive the funds that were collected pre-reduction in value of that property, the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District would effectively be receiving a tax rate of just over 1.1%, which is 0.1% in excess of the statutory maximum permitted under the statute. This case also has the potential of coming precariously close to overriding the legislature's declaration of total allowable ad valorem tax revenues of $3.64 per $100 of assessed valuation. The total combined tax rate for the properties in question here in Washoe County now is set at 3.3656%. That's 0.277 cents under the cap. If the Washoe County were to increase future property tax allocations, they could only do so to that limited extent, and that's yet another political decision that is entrusted to our elected Board of County Commissioners, into which it's my opinion that the judiciary shouldn't tread.
You know, focusing specifically on Judge Flanagan's order.
Pardon me?
Judge Flanagan's order.
Yes.
Was very specific, and he indicated it's a political question. We can't get involved unless there's something arbitrary and capricious in this scheme. And I think the argument is requiring this payment in a short period of time is indeed arbitrary and capricious. Could you address that and address the political question thing very specifically?
I think it would be there's an argument to be made that making the payments in a short period of time is somewhat arbitrary and capricious, but the timeline for making these payments, we have to remember, was set by Judge Adams in the Second Judicial District Court upon or following this court's decision in the Barham case. Judge Adams imposed a duty on the treasurer to get these refunds completed within an 18-month period. That 18-month period expires this coming August. As of now, the treasurer has completed the refund process of all the ad valorem taxes thus that were unconstitutionally collected, and she's at the final stages of calculating interest due on the final payments that are made. I believe the treasurer anticipates that she will be fully completed with this process sometime during the month of July, certainly by the deadline imposed by Judge Adams. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
And finally, in closing, I would remind the court of the distinct possibility that this case and the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District's argument raises the specter that this court, or the possibility that this court is being asked to override the Constitution's guarantee at Article 10, Section 1 of a uniform and equal rate of taxation by making an exception to the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District's rate of taxation in this case. In response to one of Mr. Reese's comments, I don't doubt that the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District is filled with great people, but I remind the court that so are all the other taxing jurisdictions, including Washoe County. As far as the district's reliance on these funds, don't be deceived by that argument. The district knew as far back as 2009 in its consolidated financial statement, which is contained in the record, Volume 3 at page 390, that this was a liability that they were facing. In 2011, they booked the liability in that year's consolidated financial statement on pages 520, 523, 524, and 554 of the joint appendix. Thank you very much.
Mr. Kriegman, thank you. Mr. Reese.
Your Honor, my time is short. Justices, I thank you again for the opportunity to be here. The reality is there are no statutes that govern this particular dispute. There are no cases that are firmly on all fours with it. We have to apply some standard and modicum of, appropriate judicial intervention into cases where there are no statutes on point. We also have to think about the way the world works outside of these doors, because I believe that fundamentally we are here to do justice, and that's what the writ asks. In this case, over a period of 7 years, my client received funds that ultimately was determined it was not entitled to. That's conceded. But the issue is, who bears the burden of that when that does happen? And our position is that because of the unique nature of 474-200 created fire districts, that burden rests with the county, who may use their rainy day fund, their emergency fund, their E&O insurance. They may move money from other places. I don't believe you should do it in an unconstitutional manner, that I should get more, that the client should get more than their share of the dollar. But we have to be practical. My client relies upon Washoe County to do what it does with the money and just simply takes it and goes and does what it does with it, which is save lives. When that happens, the question that this court has to say is, who bears the burden of filling the hole now that we know it's empty? The case law that is closest to the point says that there's a fiduciary, a special relationship, the practicalities of the fact that we hire and pay the county to do it. I think, look, we have a timeline here that's 7 years, and we're looking at that. It's not like we said, okay, there was one single taxpayer who overpaid and we owe $1.73 back and we've caught it quickly. In this case, you're talking about a huge number of years that have passed. How can my client ever budget for the practical realities of running a fire district if at any moment it is concerned that the county, who has the exclusive control over it, is to say, oh, we made a mistake? It's not that easy. If this was a short period of time, we'd be talking about something else. In this case, the county acted arbitrarily and capriciously by acting in a manner that was not consistent with the law, by not having an adequate basis for making the decision they did, and then by saying over a 7-year period, we're going to claw it back in 18 months, and oh, by the way, we're going to charge you interest. A three to two vote on the interest. At least two of the county commissioners did not believe that that was fair because they had no say over how many times Mr. Creekman and that office appealed and challenged the continuing orders of Judge Adams through four different lawsuits. How could my client be responsible, therefore, to pay almost $1 million of interest at that point? It doesn't make sense to me. It is not just the way that Mr. Creekman used the taxing authority of the county. It doesn't go anywhere toward providing what is this court's charge, which is to do justice. That's all that we've asked for, nothing more, nothing less. And my time is certainly up, but I would take questions if there were
any. Any questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Reese. Mr. Honor. Creekman, thank you for your arguments today and your excellent briefs in the case. The matter will stand submitted, and the court will be in recess.